I have started this recording with the permission of Dr. Nidhi Gulati. It's 6/7/2021 and it's 8:07 p.m. We both are in Delhi. And ma'am, let's begin by ma'am, you teach in Institute of Home Science and Department of Elementary Education.
I teach at the Institute of Home Economics at the Department of Elementary Education. So this is not just home science. Our college also offers a lot of science programs. It offers microbiology, biochemistry, food technology, journalism, besides bachelor's, master's, diploma and PhD programs in home science.
Yes, ma'am. Ma'am, in Department of Elementary Education, there is one course offered, that is BEL-Ed.
Yeah, yeah.
Ma'am, for how long you have been teaching this program?
18 years.
Oh, that's wonderful, ma'am. And ma'am, I'm going to ask you a bit of the bit questions about the intake of the program. What is the intake for your program, assigned intake?
So the assigned intake is 50 as per the National Council of Teacher Education Regulations 2014. Yes, but owing to the OBC expansion and then the EWS expansion, the numbers are now 67. So our intake is 67 for each batch.
Okay. So presently you have 67 students in your batch?
In first year.
And in second year?
Second year, we have fewer students. So second year, I think we have 52. And then third year, we had dropouts. We again have 42. And fourth year, we had 51.
Why do you think there's a decline? There's a decline in number from year-wise, like annually, there's a decline in number.
Oh, okay. So for the second batch, there was an intake of 62.
Okay.
And we could not take 62. I think we took 58. And then through the year, the program is very rigorous. So a lot of students also tend to drop out because of the fear of the rigor of a professional program. Also, not many students decide to become teachers soon after passing 12th. You know, one has to make that call. That call is not made after 12th. So if you walk into a classroom in the first year and say, how many of you want to be teachers? Very few of them would raise their hands, right? But the 4 years of the program, most of them learn to love teaching and learn to develop a professional attitude towards teaching. But by and large, there is this also this sociological trend to not want to be a teacher, right?
Ma'am, speaking of, students not feeling the call to be a teacher, what is the key motivation you can point out for them to join a teacher education program?
See, as of now, I feel they joined the program mostly because of parental pressure. And parental pressure that this will offer a half-day job, which is also a secure job. And it is good for women. And there is this kind of feminization of the teaching profession. And therefore, there's a lot of pressure on students. And therefore, they just, you know, I don't know whether you've read Ruth Josephson, but there is, they don't go through that moratorium. They just give in. There is a foreclosure. They just give in to their parental choices. And frankly speaking, not many graduate programs in the University of Delhi or elsewhere offer the chances to get a job, right? One may do a BA history and then again figure out now what. So that professional degree people are able to get. Some of them also want to be teacher educators. In fact, most of them say right in the first year that when can we become like you, right? And so there is a whole gamut of things. They all want to be upwardly, economically and socially mobile, right? So for that mobility, they think that this might be a good program. So some of the key motivations why they stay on in the program is this. And see, a graduate has already been a graduate and knows that, has already taken a call, what now? I've done my graduation. I have nothing in my hand. It doesn't mean a thing. Nobody will give me a job. And what now? And then offers to do secondary education.
Yes, ma'am. Now coming back to the course intake, have you seen a decline, or you know the numbers are still the same of intake of admissions up from 2019, 2020, or 19?
No, there is no decline.
Okay, the numbers are consistent throughout.
Yeah, I mean there has only been an increase. Like when we had the admission committee in 2018, 15,600 candidates applied for 300, 400 odd seats. Yeah. And I think the numbers are the same. So it's only the matter of timing in the calendar of admissions. Suppose we've already had undergraduate admissions or not had undergraduate admissions, or are they running parallel? So choices are made accordingly. Right? So somebody who's already got a computer science may not want to shift here. But somebody who's got a history and or not got anything else will come here and stay. Right? So it depends where, what is the timing? Is it running concurrently? Is it not running concurrently with the other undergrad admissions?
I understand, ma'am. Ma'am, regarding the proportion of students from different streams, what can you comment on the proportion you get from language in comparison to language, history, social science, biology, if there's any sort of, you know, intake specified from different streams?
So language would mean humanities, right?
Yes, ma'am.
But that would come with the history, social science.
History and social science, yes, ma'am.
Yeah. I feel there are a lot of commerce without maths takers. Yeah, a lot of them. Then this is followed by the art students and then the science students.
Oh, so the number of science teachers are less?
Yeah.
Oh, really? I'm surprised. And is there any other stream that is entering into the course?
No.
Okay. Ma'am, what can you say about the quality of students that you intake? We talked about the aspiration, we talked about the motivation of students. Apart from that, even if they do not have any inclination towards the program initially, but overall, what can you comment about the quality of students regarding their academic qualifications, scores, or...
See, the scores vary from 98% to 52% because it is based on an entrance exam, right? So, Aditi, honestly, I feel that our program, the academic caliber of students is just as good as any other good honors program. It is very comparable to a good English honors program in the university, for instance. And... the basic premise of the program is very liberal. It just assumes that all students have the potential to be, right? And therefore, when they come in, you know, we treat them as really brilliant and interested in the program.
I hope so, ma'am.
But what happens is that some of them are not interested in reading. But what also happens is over the 4 years, we've seen all students change. Okay, some for the worst and some for the better. So motivations change, their interests change, their own life stories change. You know, for instance, let me tell you about two students or three students. So there was this student who was the daughter of an IAS officer and was forced by the father to take up this program. She repeated the second year 3 times and she was interested in Yeah. And she was interested in becoming a makeup artist.
Okay.
And she's finally finished her course and become a makeup artist, right? And even in class, she would walk in and, you know, one would watch with fascination the makeup on her face. So for her, it was just about, you know, somehow completing the degree. She was not interested. Then there was another girl who joined who was very interested in makeup. Okay. Very interested, and she would be, right from year one, wearing fascinating lipsticks, and it would be nice to watch her, knotted tops. In the fourth year, in my gender class, so my class is divided into the left side and the right side. She would come to occupy a chair. She would park it right in the middle aisle of the class, right opposite me, right? And she would go on and on about all classical feminists. She'd read them, and she'd read them and learned them by heart. So she'd often just quote, Betty Friedan or Sima de Beauvoir, and she would just start quoting them. It'd be fascinating, someone who's been least interested in the program for 3 years, in fourth year, in one paper, she's just crossed every limit, right?
She's blooming.
Yeah. So it's very interesting to see that kind of flourishing, right? And then I've met some old students. So when I've taught at NSD, Tripura, or other programs, and some old students come up and they say, ma'am, we were not that interested in learning when we were in graduation. And it's only later in our life paths we realize the value of what we were getting and how we should be invested in our own learning, right? So a lot of them come back to it, right? So people take their own journeys. And I would say that even if they get interested in one course, or reading something, or, moving ahead on any career path, I think it's half a job is done, right?
Yes, ma'am. Two very contrasting examples you shared.
Yeah, and see, both of them related to the makeup, right? I'm not judging makeup. So I'm being very clear about it. I'm not judging makeup. Something I would have done in 2004. But being in the program, I've kept asking myself, so what's wrong with it? So what's wrong with it?
It also takes a special sort of a challenge and commitment. Not everyone has it.
Yeah. And what's wrong with it?
yeah. Someone who has it, hats off to you, man.
Ma'am, moving on to the next part,
moving beyond the quality of the students, what is the socioeconomic profile of your students who are usually involved in the program?
So before we had the online admissions, I used to feel that there is a particular pocket in Delhi, somewhere around Narela or somewhere in the outskirts, we would get about 20 students each, right? So it's as if that in some places people have decided that our men will either go to the police and the women will become teachers, right? So there were these sociological pockets in Delhi where people would choose this profession, right? It's as if they decided, and I really wanted to study. I think in 2017, for the first time, admissions were done in the digital mode, okay? And then is when the profile changed.
Okay.
Now we get a mix of middle class, one or two from the upper middle class, and then lower middle class, and then also... Initially, we used to get some from the very low middle class, from the low class also. Ab nahi aate, not in the past few years.
Because of the change in the mode of admission.
Yeah. So the first few batches, it would be very interesting to watch that somebody had move 5 kilometers by foot to reach a bus, right? So they were from the interior pockets. Around Delhi. But ab nahi hai aisa. Or there was this one student who topped our program, and I noticed that both her parents were uneducated, and she'd worn the same pair of slippers for the entire 4 years of the program, right? So one could figure that what this job would mean for her, right? So,
ma'am, do you think there's a shift in the class of the students because maybe of the lack of resources or issue of availability, that mode of
education? I think the digital thing.
It's the accessibility issue that they
So the minute admissions are made digital, certain people will come in, certain will not. The minute the entrance exam is held digitally, certain people will come in. The minute you have things digital, the fee goes up, right? The exam fee goes up, everything goes up. So you have to find a center, you have to travel to that center to take that exam. It has to have internet access. You have to keep following up the list, right? And all of them come digitally. So you have to have continuous mobile data for the next 3 months. So all of it is very tricky. It's not just one time, right? It is a continuous follow-up also. And people find it easier to walk up to the next DIT or SCRT and say, let's do a course here, right? Because see the kind of persistence and patience that is needed to everyday check websites and checklists. Would you do that? Tell me. It's really painful to keep checking lists. You know, ki ab sixth list aa gayi hai, ab seventh list aa gayi hai, ab naam nahi hai, aapko koi clue bhi nahi hai ki aapka naam hoga ki nahi hoga. So aapko kitne din tak mobile data rakhna hai? It's not easy. And now the payments are also done through the mobile. So I think it's just a movement towards middle class, right? The middle rung of the middle class.
I think it's a way of creating an exclusion for a certain.
It is
class.
Absolutely.
It is actually creating an exclusion.
Yeah. We did kind of in 2017 when they first announced it, we vehemently opposed it, but the university was clear that this is the way forward and this is what we're going to do. And what has happened is that, of course, we get students from all over the country now, but there is a whole lot that's been left out.
Ma'am, moving to the next part, what are the I mean, apart from teaching, because you know job is essential for most of the students, they're looking for a shortcuts to be employed. Since it's a professional course, they're hoping to get a job. So apart from teaching, have you witnessed any students occupying a job anywhere else, in any other stream or
department? Yeah, some of them have done an MBA
after completion of the course.
Yeah, one or two are IAS aspirants. Okay. Two, three of them worked in a bank as a probationary officer. And of course, I told you about the makeup artist.
Yes, ma'am.
We have three makeup artists. Yeah. And then, of course, there are those who marry and go abroad.
Yeah, there's that lot also. moving to the next part. What do students like in the program? It's a four-year program. It's a rigorous program. You require a constant commitment. So what is it that they really like in the program?
What I think what they like is self-development. And because the demands of the program are also not too heavy. The second thing that they like is papers towards the third year and the fourth year of the program that give them an edge of theory, right? So when they realize that they are able to talk very eloquently about their subject matter, they feel empowered. And theory is empowering, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So even though they find it very difficult to make the field praxis connections, the theory praxis connections in the reflective writing, I felt that is one of the strong parts of the program. But that fascinates very few. So I think one or two of them like in every batch, one or two of them like doing research projects. But by and large, I think they like to listen and talk eloquently about theory.
Yes, ma'am. BLED course does provide you that kind of ethos.
Yeah. And which is beautiful. Theory yes, and vocabulary is empowering, right?
Ma'am, moving on from the likes of the student, what they enjoy. Now, coming to the challenges, have they report any sort of challenges, you know, very something on which you wish that you pay attention more, or even
internship.
After completion of the course? Okay.
Internship
is difficult.
Very rigorous, very difficult, very demanding, has a very high component of internal assessment. Teacher bias can play havoc there. Also, they're very nebulous identity in the school. You know, they're neither here nor there. School teachers see them as somebody who's just coming to help them or as assistants. Yeah, didis, ye aa gayi hain, ab ye kar lengi types. And so this child student actually gets squeezed between the school and the teacher education program. And that can become very tricky. Third, most of them complain that they do not have money. They end up spending a lot of money during internship. So they feel that there should be a stipend. They do feel burdened by the heavy internal assessment of the program. And they feel that there were lighter moments. Then they also feel really stuck by the 9 to 5:30 classes. So, and they feel burdened by them. So I also think that there have to be days where they're just doing nothing, you know. There has to be time to think, assimilate, read, or just be, or just go out and be with your friends. So the everyday 9 to 5 thing can become very challenging.
So I think during this experience, their teacher education experience, they start questioning the identity of a teacher.
Absolutely.
I think that sort of experience could do that to you. Ma'am, since we talked about the school and the teacher teaching practice experience of students, what feedback you get from the school with which you have associations for teacher education program? First, you know, where are you sending them for practice? So any sort of interaction you have with the school after completion of the practice, they give you some sort of feedback about your students?
So it's all very student dependent. So the students who are able to put in the work, teachers are very happy with them, and the feedback is genuine. We feel the same about those students. And students who are a little lackadaisical, or, you know, a little casual, take leave often, come very late, or not very serious about classes, the teachers do complain that they're not, there is a lack of seriousness, and these students are wasting time of our students. And so that is definitely there. I do feel that teacher feedback is honest. Okay. And we've very few times they've said that time waste ho rahe. I don't think they say that. It's only once or twice that, you know, we've heard ye padha nahi rahe. By and large, it's been good. Good and consistent and comprehensive, you know, and commiserate with what we as teacher educators think of the student. You know, like, we're looking at the plan, we're looking at reflections, we know, and we're going and supervising. We know this girl is putting in the effort. And we know that this girl isn't, right? So the school is also able to gauge things similarly. Like last year we had this student, you know, other teachers started attending her classes because she was fabulous. Right. And we got exemplary feedback about her. And everybody wanted to see her plans, and everybody wanted to see her work. But she was doing that, you know. She surpassed us. She surpassed the teacher educators and the school teachers in the effort that she put in. So it's fascinating to watch that, right? In every batch or every other batch, there are students like that.
Ma'am, what can you comment about the readiness students feel, like how much program is able to prepare them for the education industry? that they are soon going to step into, either government or private, public or private sector?
I think they're ready. The only thing that they need a little more investment is in content area knowledge.
Okay. Ma'am, moving to the, okay, do you keep in touch with your alumni students?
Some of them.
Do they ever give you feedback about the program?
We're planning to collect.
Okay, I hope you do.
I've developed a form, yeah.
Yeah.
So I've just got the Alumni Society registered and developed a form, and we plan to reach out. They do give a lot of feedback. By and large, they become friends and they keep in touch and they do give feedback.
Okay. Wonderful, ma'am. Ma'am, moving on to the job prospect for the course and for the students. In Delhi, you have to, in fact, not in Delhi, in many states of India, you have to clear a teacher eligibility test now.
Yeah.
So how many of your students really apply for the test?
All of them.
All of them. And how many of them are able to pass the test?
99.5.
Oh, that's nice. And what is students' perspective about this whole test?
This is I think they just see it's mandatory and they want to clear it. I don't think I've really discussed the perspective on the test. I should. Maybe someday I'll ask them.
And ma'am, what is your perspective about it?
This whole idea of teacher quality. And you know how the TET is linked to that teacher quality. I think this came in 2011.
Yes, ma'am.
Post the RTE, and we had dismal reports about teacher performance, which had to happen. You know, 63% of India's school children go to government schools, and 93% of India's teachers are trained in private institutions, and most of those private institutions are shops, and they just hand degrees, and so it is I think imperative that an eligibility test be conducted.
Ma'am, it's going to be there. I mean, there were speculations around it when it was introduced that, you know, because the passing rate is so low initially in the first few years, that everyone speculated that, you know, this is not going to be carried forward for a very long time.
Yeah.
But with the change in the timings for the, in the timings for the exam, it actually improved a lot of result. Ma'am, what can you comment about, like, you told me that the passing rate for TAT exam is 99.5%.
I collected data, you know.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
We collected data for all our students, how many had appeared. Most of them, almost all of them, barring one or two, had appeared, and all of them had cleared. It was very heartening, you know, with Delhi's rate at 4% and your rate being 99%, it was very heartening. It could also be that some BLED teachers are involved in the making of the TET. It could also be true.
Ma'am, do you help your students to prepare for the exam?
No.
Informal classes or anything?
No.
How do they really prepare for the exam then?
I don't know. I think it's inbuilt into the program, right? And you read and study education for 4 years, you do build perspectives and you do know enough about the area, right? So I don't think anybody in the BLA program has thought about the TET or talking about the TET.
Okay, right? And students never even come up to you with question, ma'am.
No.
In the previous year, I'm not able to solve it.
No. Understand it. Okay. They do come with all the master's question papers, you know, entrance papers, with all kinds of other questions, which may be weird, not so weird, all kinds, but they've never come back with this.
I get it.
In fact, I've been called to schools to help prepare teachers prepare for the TET, which is fascinating. Okay, so Kulachi Hansraj or DBS.
Employed. The teachers were already employed in the school.
Yeah.
Uskulachi Hansraj, I think Pitampura. Okay, DAV, Kulachi Hansraj, DAV.
So, and the DPS, they want to come and, they've been organizing sessions.
For their own employed teachers.
Yeah, to help them clear TET.
am in shock.
So I've been called to those programs.
No wonder, it's fascinating actually.
It is. Yeah, the whole idea of training capacity, all of it is very fascinating. Who do you think, if we were to just go to a private school and look at their degrees, how many of them would have actually got a good teacher education degree?
Yeah. I'm speaking of private schools. What is your opinion about private school employing freshers? There's discrepancies regarding the salary, the classes they are, the responsibilities they are trusted with. So what can you comment on that?
I feel they should be paid at par. It's exploitative. The other thing that is problematic vis-a-vis my program is the lack of a cadre. We do not have an elementary education cadre. Post the Right to Education Act, we should have prepared a cadre of a recognized cadre. So our students are either PRT or TGT, right? And for TGT, they have to fight or get another BEd. There has to be another cadre of elementary teachers who can teach from a span of 1 to 8, and now also the early childhood care and education after the new education policy. So that cadre has to be recognized, it has to be inbuilt, and it has to be offered on all advertisements. And that is also how the state has to start thinking, okay, that this teacher is not a secondary teacher, not a secondary program teacher. This teacher is specialized till the 8th. So that has been a big disservice in the program, okay. And I do think that students really feel helpless about it, because then either they're stuck to the primary or they have to pursue higher education if they want to move up, right? Whereas they're trained more, and some private schools recognize that in a couple of years push them up. Some are adamant, right?
Ma'am, do you have a campus placement cell? And how does that really work? You have affiliation with private schools or NGOs or anything else?
So when I was on the cell, I would write to schools, and I would also try and call whatever HR people were there in the schools, or also try and find and write to principals directly, or organize programs where schools come in contact with us, right? Over the past 3 4 years, it has just become schools which approach us and want to take a couple of people. There's a kind of a restiveness there. I think also vacancies are full, and they've taken enough BEd graduates. Past 3 4 years, I think we've been only able to place 4 or 5 students.
Oh,
But
really?
what happens is, initially it used to be much, much more, 20, 30 students in a batch of 35 or 40. But now gradually that has really reduced. What has also happened is, I have a feeling that by July, okay, so April, May, and June, July, by July, almost 50, 60% of them get jobs. So wherever they apply, they're able to get a job.
And how do they
But
really
the
look for jobs?
placements are, sorry?
How do they really look for jobs? Because from college, you have 4 to 5 placement in the past few years
So
only.
what happens is, like me, there are also other teacher educators. So I like to keep in touch with my old students through continuing the WhatsApp batch, right? So like I would have a class of 2018, a class of 2017, a class of 2021. And every time I come across an advertisement or somebody approaches me or there is an email to college, I forward it to those groups, right? And sometimes schools like Ajayim Premji schools often ask for recommendations, then I ask in the group, and whosoever is interested, I forward their resumes. So I'm sure other people in our bar, other teacher educators also do that. And I'm sure students also have formal informal networks. And of course, advertisements, and they look for vacancies at the usual places. So one tends to be in touch and continues to be in touch over a longish period with students. I think that's helpful.
Ma'am, apart from private schools, do your students also see job in government schools?
All of them.
Okay, everyone.
If you were to ask me, most of the students who've passed out before 2016, because the rest are still pursuing higher education, those who've not gone up to doing a PhD, most of them, at least from my college, are teaching in government schools.
Okay.
So some of them do it directly. Some of them do it directly, and some of them actually go to a master's or an MMed and then go back to teaching in a government school. So if given a chance, most of them do go back, and it's very heartening to know that.
And how many of the students, like out of the total lot, how many of them are able to secure a government job? Because there are limited vacancies.
Those who try get it.
Okay.
So see, there is also an option of Kendra Vidyalaya, right?
Yes,
or the Navodaya Vidyalaya, or this program or that program. So those who try, those who want, they get it. I've never heard a student said we appeared for exam, we didn't clear it, or we didn't get it this time. Always had students come up and say, we've got it, right? And so-and-so has also got it, so-and-so has also got it. People who settled, you know, somebody who's teaching in Delhi public school is settled, would not even try and would not get it, right?
Ma'am, do any of your students also enter into NGOs who are associated with the education sector? And
they enter into all kinds of things. NGOs, definitely.
And what all are they involved with in NGO? What is their main working profile with them?
Some BLED students are involved with the Ajayim Premji Foundation or the Wipro Foundation. Some are involved with programs like Muskan. There is also the Drishti Foundation, something like that. Some non-alternative, some alternative schools. They're also involved with startups in the education sector, primarily to do with curriculum making or technology interface.
And how many, like if I say there's a ratio, there's a proportion of 50 students, out of 50, how many are involved in alternative careers related to education? Like you said, startup and curriculum.
Five.
Out of 55.
Yeah.
That's still an interesting number.
Yeah.
Ma'am, moving on to the next part, that is related to your institute, that is related to your department. Do you feel any sort of challenge in the name of tenure, salary, or faculty development opportunities? Any employment-related challenges? Okay. Do you face any sort of challenges from students? You do get good quality students who have cleared entrance and with...
assume that they're good quality. we begin that assumption and we end with that assumption that if there is something wrong, then it's definitely something wrong with us, that we could not, you know, encourage them to enjoy the program. So students' challenges are that increasingly most of them don't want to read, most of them don't want to write, they hate doing reflections. There is always a delay in submission. They cannot understand the assessment procedure. Most of them think the teachers are biased, which by now there are enough safeguards in the program. We watch for bias very carefully. For instance, if I tend to feel that this is a student I may have a bias against, I will tend not to mark that student, or even if I mark that student, I will share that work with another teacher. And there's a lot of open discussion about prejudice, bias. There's an open discussion amongst faculty about sharing of, you know, suppose I mark somebody at 60, and if there are 13 other faculty members who've marked the student at 80, right? So I will be asked questions about what happened, you know, in your area. Can we see that work? Can we see that assignment? Or vice versa as well, right? I can also turn around and say, why are you all marking her at 80, right? So there have been students, like last year, there was this one student who everybody had marked at 80 and I had marked at 60. And then we make sure that there are teams marking students. So we repeatedly looked back at the project, repeatedly looked for presentation, repeatedly egged the student on that, is there something else that you need to add to this data? And we realized she's not put in the work here, right? Okay. She has put in the work in other places. So students may feel, that there is a lot of bias. It may also exist. I'm not saying that we're all, you know, superhuman. It may exist with few teachers also. We also see amongst faculty, we're critical of each other, like this one faculty member. I see that faculty member always marking between 64 and 67. And I feel that that faculty member is playing the safest because that person has just averaged out everybody's marks. So a student whom I have given 50, you know, and this person gives a 66, it averages. A person whom I've given 75 and this person gives a 64, it averages, right? So the meaning of assessment as being some kind of discerning between the work of different students, that gets lost. So assessment, I feel, really needs a lot of work. And of course, students should read more and also be very regular with submission of their work. So that bluffing they do, you know, it's very unfortunate that one has to chase students for internals, and till the last minute we keep accepting them, and it just dilutes the rigor of the program, right? Because one is not being fair to students who've submitted in time. So exigencies one understands, emergencies one understands, but now it's just becoming a trend that 1/4 of the class will not submit. And then they will start, you know, arguing about the last date. The last date was not February, it was May. However, I'm submitting at June end. So, madam, you are wrong. You never gave this assignment in January to be submitted in February end. So there is this whole idea of time management, which students are not able to do.
Ma'am, do you have any comments about the affiliating schools, like the schools with which you are affiliated for teaching practice? Any sort of challenges you face from their side?
No.
We talked about the exploitation or, you know, the regular
teachers. That is the nature of the internship, no? So there is a difference between the school being exploitative vis-a-vis the nature of the internship program being as such. See, the very identity of an intern is nebulous, neither here nor there, right? It's very tenuous. They don't know. They know that they're temporary. They know that if to impress the teacher educator, they know they have to somehow manage the school, right?
Ma'am, you are your Institute of Home Economics is from DU. So, do you have any comments about the affiliating body?
No.
Your college is attached to any? Okay. Any comments about NCTE regulations?
What about them? I wrote them.
I'm asking your comments about them.
I wrote them, I'm telling you. I was the research assistant to that committee. Every regulation has been written by me.
Okay, I think wrong question.
I think they're brilliant. I think they're brilliant.
This could be your safest comment.
No, of course, you know, we spent 2 years working from 8 in the morning till 11 in the night. So what to say about them?
Are we talking about the 2014 regulations?
Ma'am, what is your view on, what are your views on 4-year program as per NEP 2020?
See, this one size fits all is going to be a problem. Okay, so one standardized program will be a problem. We need a diversity of programs. At the moment, there are 16 or 18 teacher education programs in the country, and we are now saying that we will have just one. It's deeply problematic. Second, like I said, no student in this country or elsewhere in the current socioeconomic scenario and the market scenario and the neoliberal changes will stand up after 12th class and say, oh, I want to be a teacher. They're not willing to make that commitment. And, you know, that that pulse of the adolescent has to be read by the state. You know, this career choices are not made at 17 years of age. It's you know, absolutely impractical to expect students, adolescents to be making and taking that call, right? So longer duration programs are welcome. They're very good. Credit-based programs are very good. However, there has to be another mechanism, or there have to be multiple entry points and exit points. There has to always be a basket approach in our country, right? There is immense diversity, difference, disadvantage, local needs, local conditions. So there has to be a very different.
Ma'am, moving to the present scenario, that is the pandemic we are all facing from past 1.5 years, how your college prepared itself to carry on the classes during the Corona times?
It was just thrust upon us, so I don't think there was any preparation.
Okay.
We all figured it on along the way. And then, of course, there were ICT trainings, but they came later.
But the initial phase was must be very challenging.
It was. And we overdid it because being available online means 24/7. And that kind of, you know, otherwise one would just pick one's bag at 5 o'clock and come back home and would shut college work or do it at one's pace. But then we, I think last year we overdid meetings. We went on till 9 or 10 in the night, and that was painful.
Plus it also, you know, makes you look available most of the time.
Yeah.
Whenever you are not, obviously. One cannot be available all the time.
Yeah.
Ma'am, what are the challenges as on the behalf of your faculty from your personal experience or your conversation with the faculty members, can you point out in context of COVID-related issues?
So there is this exact thing that there is this availability expectation to be there 24/7. Second, we do not have interaction with students. Right. So I'm currently teaching two batches who have never seen me, and I have not seen them.
Okay.
And it's very problematic. You know, it takes them about a month to figure out that, oh, she's serious and she means business. Otherwise, in class, you know, you just walk up and they look at you and they know, oh, shit, she means business. Right. So the seriousness of the program goes away. Most faculty have felt that. Most faculty members have also felt that there is meetings go on and on, and because there is no way to stop the other person and say, okay, enough. and we have a hand in each pie. So it's problematic. Work has increased manifold, and the boundary between work and home is receding. And teacher education programs are very busy programs. We really like to keep people busy without any business also. So like I've said, that there are no off spaces, there are no off timings, and there are no timings when one just shuts up and says, okay, done. So also the care needs of the family during the pandemic, you know, it's as if the learning has to go on. It's like a show. And one is not able to perform the domestic duties or perform them all the time and still find those social bubbles where sanitized from everybody else in the home who may be old or young or aging or needs to cook or needs to, you know, perform domestic labor because help is not available. You know, you just shut the door on all of that and you continue in your sanitized bubble. I find that deeply problematic, right?
Yes, ma'am.
It's not available to everybody. And think of urban cramped homes. Think of where do you find that corner. So most of the times, most of us are just sitting on one edge of the bed or one chair all day and doing this. It's not the right thing to happen to anybody, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So what should have happened is just like the schools prorated their timings, we should have also done that. Okay. However, the university is not willing to pay salary to ad hoc teachers if we do that. So we continue with the same workload. And so we requested that let's reduce our teaching time by 10 minutes for an arts class. Let's make it 50 or 55 so that we get a break to walk. We weren't given that. You know, so it is painful. Sometimes you have five classes in a day and to be sitting there for 5 hours making sense online is really hard. You know, in a class, I can crack a joke. In a class, I can stop speaking. You know, in a class, I can ask a student to explain something, read out something. I can go out, take a walk, right? I can drink my coffee. I can just chit chat with students.
It's a two-way street in a classroom between a student and a teacher. Yeah. Not there online.
Yeah.
Ma'am, talking about teachers' challenge, now moving on to students' one. In your opinion, what all challenges your students faced? There were issues at home or resources?
Exactly. Issues at home, data plaques get over. Learning is very disinteresting. So there are times, you know, and we assume that students have laptops. So even if I am using a Jamboard or sharing a reading, and sometimes I attend something on my phone, I realize how immensely difficult it is to read something on the phone, right? So I know it's extremely hard for students. They also find it challenging to decode the OBE. They find it challenging to, figure out all this digital thing on their phone. They find it challenging, you know, sometimes when we ask them to unmute, they cannot. And during attendance, they have to unmute. And I realize the amount of noise in the background, you know, parents or siblings are shouting, there's a television blaring. I mean, and I really shudder to think that this is how the student is attending class, right? I don't know what kind of sanitized social bubble we assume that the student has, right? They live
and
in
even
a
teachers,
two-bedroom.
It's really challenging for them also.
Yeah, we live in a two-bedroom house, right? One-bedroom house. So I don't know. People stop living just because this girl has class every day from 9 to 5 for the past 1.5 years. And how can you attend when the TV is blaring in the background? So both ways, I don't understand.
When we talked about decreasing or, you know, prolonging the duration of the course, just like schools have done it. So what can you comment on the pandemic effect on the quality of the program or, you know, the objectives of the program, how much of them are being fulfilled? How your
very few. See, there is no field practice connection that's happening anymore. Also, the face-to-face is reduced highly. So I think the program is just acting like a correspondence course.
And ma'am, does your college bought in any novelties to prepare itself for online situation?
I think the Google Classroom and the Zoom or some links or something.
And how
I think
you
they
were
also
prepared?
Set up. We were given some faculty development sessions.
Yes, ma'am.
Also, the university held some advanced pedagogic training techniques in several kinds of these digital things, like the flipped classroom or the Kahoot or whatever. So, yeah.
That's it. Those are the only questions I have for you.
Lovely. I was waiting for it to end.
I'm so sorry. I'm going to stop the recording now, and I thank you for your time and all the interesting.
You're welcome, Aditi. You're welcome.